Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming along. 503-733-2970. Tim Riley's printed out the entire history of the Whitman's Candy Company here.
Because you asked for it.
Yeah. Sure enough, they only sell samplers. That's all they sell. Hundreds of varieties, millions of sizes, all of them called samplers.
It's kind of like a candy tease.
The whole thing makes me angry. I know.
Too late now, the guy's dead.
Well,
too late for anger.
In 1842, a 19-year-old Quaker named Stephen F. Whitman set up a small, here's a word you don't hear enough. A confectionery and fruitery. Ah, that's fantastic. I want to open a fruitery. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Oh, apparently they have Whitman's light chocolates as well. By 1907, Whitman's candies were appearing on... You know, Whitman's candies, they seem like one of those... As a side note, whenever you see a logo that says, like, whatever, like here, Whitman's, since 1842, do you automatically assume that's a lie? Whenever they say, like, since 1920, you just figure that it's a company that started 4 years ago, they incorporated in Manhattan, and that's just some crap that they start, like that Cracker Barrel store, or that restaurant, whatever the hell that place is, and they stick that up there. There was an epidemic of this in the 80s when, this is a thing that Sarah didn't have to live through, but in the 80s, there was a horrible fashion trend where all the high school kids wore surf clothing. And all of the and it was all of these, like, fictitious surf company shirts, and it was all, like, established 1942, Huntington Beach. That's exactly what I assume about all of this crap when it's just, like, Whitman Sampler since 1842.
I take issue with that.
Yeah. Screw that.
And I'll tell you why, briefly.
Okay.
If you're on the East Coast, things go back a lot further. And I remember I had a new sponsor in this town that I worked in, Newburyport, Massachusetts, which goes back to the whaling days. And it was like Jones Boatyard, serving the North Shore since 1642. So depending on... if you're on the East Coast or where some pilgrims came, chances are you might have a sponsor that has been around since the 1600s.
That was actually there in the Paleozoic era? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, fair enough. And they buy annuals. They've been buying them since the 1600s.
There's some company that...
They used to buy them from the town crier who rang the bell.
Some company that has a patent on fire. Okay. Well, that's a lot funnier than what I was going to say.
As it always is.
I was going to say that...
I was just speaking factually.
Well, Whitman Samplers, doesn't they seem like some company that ought to be sponsoring Paul Harvey? I mean, they're not, but they ought to be. Lars got this... Well, we've got this Toyota 4Runner, and it's got the worst radio in the history of the world. And the radio, there's a short in it somewhere. And I don't really know where, and I'm unable to fix it because I would electrocute myself, but... There is a short somewhere in the faceplate of her radio, a faceplate that never comes off, by the way, because the whole truck gets stolen like twice a year now. So it's like, what's the point of, you know, it's the point of trying to keep a stereo there. But you can't, it doesn't have a knob to change the dial. It's got push buttons to change to tune. But the problem is there is a short somewhere in the whole system. So when you push the radio tuning button, like one time out of three, it'll just turn the whole radio off. So you could, like, if I want to tune from, let's say, 970... to, like, whatever, an FM, or, like, up to, like, what was I looking for? I was looking for some crowd, that Drudge show that's on. I've never actually heard the Drudge radio show this weekend.
He has a piercing voice.
His voice is very, it cuts through, though, as they say in radio, because it's very sort of harsh sounding. I don't even know if it's bad. But anyway, I was trying to tune, and I would tune, and it would get about, you know, it would go from, like, 970 to, like, you know, like, 1010, and then the radio would turn off. And then I would have to turn the radio back on, tune another third of the way, radio would turn off. Tune another third of the way. But I stopped at some point, it was like an 1190. They're like, and be listening for Paul Harvey, weekdays at 4. And I know that this observation gets made several times a year, but goddamn, when is he going to die? And I don't say that like I'm hoping he will. But
certainly, he was old. I remember listening to him when I was a little kid. And he sounded on the brink of death when I was like 5.
I used to dub him on the carts when you were a little kid.
I mean, yeah. And I'm not saying, like, die, you Paul Harvey. Damn you, die. I don't care. Live a long life. I mean, he's a role model for all of us. It really is more of a factual and scientific question. When is he going to die?
How old is he?
150. He's got to be. 100. He has to be.
He's not 100.
He's in his 90s.
I mean, well, look, and if you follow the sort of assumption that we do, that everybody shaves their ages a little bit. I mean, what did we say? Your age is, you shave it by like 20% or 15%. If he admits to being 90, I mean, maybe at that age you just don't care. Maybe you just don't shave years anymore. I'm 90, screw you. But I had those Paul Harvey Rest of the Story books when I was a kid. I was just like, he was already ancient when I was a kid. I remember listening to him on KONA, Kona Radio, which we kids always called Koma Radio.
So his birthday is September 4th, 1918.
So he's
good
how
God.
Old? So how old is that?
I have no idea.
So he's 80-something.
88? No, he's 88. Older than... No, there's no way. I call BS on that right now. He's got to be older than that. He has to be, because, I mean, I guess he doesn't have to be, but maybe he was... The only explanation for Paul Harvey only being 88 is that he just seemed prematurely old always. Maybe. So maybe when he was 20...
There are like 10 different sources here saying he was born in 1918.
He's always had that evangelical preacher look to
him. He does. He really does, too. He would make a fantastic preacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we poke fun. Here's the thing. We're making fun of Paul Harvey, but, you know, he's a legend. Mm-hmm. He's a giant. He really is. This is like when Ann Landers died, and Dan Savage wrote this whole glowing column about Ann Landers. You never really see the connection between those two. But you know what? As much as we make fun, he's like Larry King. He's one of those guys, you know, just towers over the rest of us. And we're going to remember him long after I'm dead. I'll be dead, and he'll still be doing the goddamn thing. That young man's name was Jesus. You know, and now you know, that'll be it. All right.
What are we doing here?
We're doing page two with Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
And the thing about that Whitman sampler is, everyone is panic-stricken that they're going to grab the chocolate they don't like the gross jelly one that makes everybody gag.
Do you get the feeling that it's like a Bertie Bott's Every Flavor Beans thing there, where they put some crap in that no one wants?
Yeah.
Just to, like, you know, just to keep it sort of even, just to make it all a wash?
Gooseberry.
All right, let's... Snozberry. Let's go around the room quickly. Your favorite Whitman chocolate flavor. Sarah, go.
Ooh, I like the hard, like, chocolate nougat-y stuff in the middle.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Really good.
Oh, the ones that break your teeth.
Yeah. Well, some of us, perhaps.
Rick.
Well,
Paul Harvey probably doesn't eat that one.
No, I'm just saying. Anyway, I'm a big fan of the caramel, the chocolate covered caramel. I like those a lot too. Also, anything that is coconutty. I'm a huge fan of coconut.
Oh yeah,
that
too.
I love coconut.
You just took mine.
That's what
I'm
saying.
All right, then we can all never share a Whitman sampler.
Somebody bring us a Whitman sampler for Christmas. All right, and then we can fight, and then you can hear us fight over the coconut like so many rabid woodchucks. All right, here's Tim Riley.
All right, let's begin with the Bushwatch, shall we?
Fantastic. Here's your Bushwatch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Resident is kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard, that's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that thing? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our man.
Well, the president says he's not aware that anyone in his administration made threatening remarks to Pakistan after 9/11.
No, of course not.
In a news conference, the president was pressed about comments that the president of Pakistan made on 60 Minutes. The leader said a key U.S. official threatened to bomb Pakistan back to the Stone Age if Pakistan did not cooperate with America.
I guess I was taken aback by the harshness of the words. All I can tell you is that shortly after 9/11, Secretary Colin Powell came in and said, President Musharraf understands the stakes and he wants to join and help.
All I can tell you is he's apparently become a plumber from New Jersey. Here's the thing about Pakistan, and I don't pretend to be an expert on it. Rick Emerson is not an expert on foreign relations, kids.
No.
But the thing about Pakistan is that even within, like, day to day... I think that they are just assuming that the whole country is on like a 20-second tape loop that is constantly erasing itself. Because George Bush, even in the space of a week, can't seem to get his crap together on Pakistan. Because first, all right, didn't he just say like 2 days ago
that he was going to invade Pakistan?
If he found out that Osama was there, mm-hmm. right? He said that. I'm not making that up, right? I'm not imagining this.
No.
Like 48 hours ago.
It happened in real life, yes.
Yes, it happened here. I wasn't hallucinating it. It wasn't one of my Adderall-induced fever dreams. Bush said, if I got reputable intelligence, Osama was in Pakistan, we'd invade. Okay. But then on this program here, like a week ago, Jesus God, I should have asked Lisa Goddard about this. Like a week ago on this show, Bush said, somebody said, well, Osama's there, why don't you go get him? And Bush said, well, we haven't been invited. We'd go get him, but they haven't let us in. So, depending on what day of the week it is, we either need to be invited or we don't. He's either there or he's not. We were either going to bomb them after 9/11 or we weren't.
Now, apparently these comments, bombed back to Stone Age, were made by Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, the Pakistan's intelligence director. At the news conference, the president said, well, maybe this was made because the Pakistani president has written a book.
I'm launching my book on the 25th, and I'm honor bound to Simon & Schuster not to comment on the book before that day.
In other words, buy the book, is what he's saying.
I don't understand what's going on there. I should note, and we'll probably talk about this here in just a while, but have you noted that Bush had, he's taken aback by comments made by President Musharraf, or Musharraf, depending on who you ask. But primarily, at no point Bush has been taken aback by Hugo Chavez's comments. Have you noticed that? That's a whole lot of Bush with, I don't hear you, I don't hear you, I don't hear you.
Oh, we have another Bush to comment on that coming up in a few minutes.
Fantastic.
Meanwhile, the president notes that the president of Pakistan has been a partner for peace.
And there's no more important issue than defending our peoples. This president is a strong defender of freedom and the people of Pakistan, and I appreciate your leadership. He understands that we're in a struggle against extremists who will use terror as a weapon.
And that's why he needs our troops in that country.
Of course.
To ensure that peace and democracy continue.
They flourish for all people.
He said the president of Pakistan said he has confidence that President Bush wants nothing but peace.
I trust President Bush, and I have total confidence in him that he desires well for Pakistan and for our region. And I trust him also that he's trying to do his best for bringing peace to the world.
Actually, Scotty is noted. Scotty Jay's made a comment on the screen here. He says that Pakistan is harboring Osama, but we don't want war with them. Of course, you have to respect them, or Pakistan will nuke us. That's exactly the thing, is that Pakistan and India both have nuclear weapons.
Yes.
So you'll notice that we don't screw with Pakistan or India. North Korea has nuclear weapons. You will note that we don't screw with North Korea. I mean, That's the whole thing, man. It's really just a whole lot of we're really willing to take on bad guys as long as they're completely understaffed, as long as there's no one home and they have a budget of like $4 to run their military.
Meanwhile, getting back to our good friend Chavez, well, not our friend, Hugo Chavez, the friend of many now, who call the president quote a devil,
friend of Jen Lane.
Yes, a friend of Jen Lane. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York had a few words for Chavez, calling him despicable and disgusting. And Governor Pataki told Chavez to get out of town. The best thing he can do is go back to Venezuela. But the crowd of hundreds cheered Chavez. He had plenty of supporters, including actor Danny Glover, City Councilman Charles Barron of Brooklyn, and celebrity Princeton professor Cornel West. They were waving Venezuelan flags.
See, these are exactly the kind of people we don't want agreeing with us on anything, though. That's the problem. As soon as you... It's like, God love him, it's like Sean Penn or Susan Sarandon or somebody. Don't it, look, and I'm a big bleeding heart, as everybody knows, but don't you just, when you're a liberal, don't you just kind of cringe a little every time that they're like, for comment, we go to, same idiot, but, you know, actor we always go to, is Sean Penn. What do you think about, you know, I'm sure Sean Penn's a fine person, and so he may even be a deep thinker. Who knows? All I'm saying is, it doesn't really help anything when every time they got to find somebody to speak from the left, that it's like some guy with, you know, like a pipe and elbow patches. You know what I mean? Just some idiot in a tweed jacket with a, you know, like a beard like Rasputin. Those people don't necessarily... And because the Republicans always find some white guy on a tractor with 15, you know, beautiful children to speak for their cause. They really win the PR battle on this kind of thing every time.
Meanwhile, former President Bush, the old one, doesn't like the comments being hurled at his son, the current President Bush, by the President of Venezuela.
Number hurt one. More when they criticize you or when they criticize your son. That ain't even a close call, believe me. Must go when they get on your family.
All right.
Well, they're putting food on his family.
There you go.
That's the Bush Watch.
There's your Bush Watch.
He's the president in residence. He's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my bird.
By the way, as Stephanie Miller this morning on her show was kind of echoing the comments we made yesterday about this, because there's all of these, and it really is a bipartisan thing that everybody's all up in arms, and by everybody I mean Gary Baumgarten and Charles Rangel, up in arms about Hugo Chavez coming here and saying that George Bush is a nitwit. But I will say, to no one's surprise, I don't have the problem with that that everybody else does, because that's presumably the whole thing about America, is that when you're here, you have the freedom of speech, even if you're not. And before everybody starts jumping all over, the Constitution only applies to people who live in this country. Of course, the framers of the Constitution believe that everybody was endowed with those rights inevitably, blah, 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 and that therefore all of those rights should theoretically be extended to everyone. Therefore, I don't have a problem some guy comes here and starts busting on George W. Bush. It doesn't bother me. All it does is just sort of make me depressed. It just sort of makes me sad and unnerved. That there is such resonance with that. You know what I mean? And she said exactly the same thing this morning that I said earlier, which is you can't imagine anybody saying that about. I cannot fathom anybody from another country, even a country that dislikes us, coming here and saying that about Clinton or even Reagan. I can't remember the last president that I could imagine another president coming here and saying those things about. Really, if you think about it, if you try to take all of that stuff that Hugo Chavez said, where he said he's the devil, and he called him an alcoholic. He said that he walks like an idiot cowboy, blah, 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 blah. Can you think of any president we have ever had about whom those statements would be applicable? Or can you think of any other president in which though you can imagine another head of state coming here and saying those things? You can't. The only person you can picture anybody saying that about is George W. Bush. And that's the thing that nobody will admit. That's what nobody will say out loud, is that the reason all of that stings so much, and I'm not even saying it's true. I'm saying whether it's true or not, that's not really the point. The point is, it feels really true. You know what I mean? Look, I don't know George W. Bush personally. MSNBC had that story. I swear to God, this is the headline. MSNBC did this story about 2 weeks ago, caused a little bit of an uproar. The story was called, "Is George W. Bush an Idiot?" I swear to God, that was the name of the story. And it was this whole thing about, is the president, because there was this study that came out, and they ranked all the presidents by IQ. And you will never guess who came in last. You'll never guess in a million years. You will get it. It's George W. Bush. So there was this whole story about, is George W. Bush an idiot? That was the name of the story. And so I don't know him. I don't pretend to have intimate knowledge of George W. Bush's intelligence. So maybe he's secretly a genius. Who knows? All I'm saying is, all of those things that Hugo Chavez said about George W. Bush, they all feel really accurate. And they all feel really true. And they have, there is that thing, man, you know the truth when you hear this stuff that just has the ring of absolute brutal honesty. And all of those things, every one of those comments hit their target. Every one of them felt like they were right on the money. And that's why they sting so bad. That's why everybody's so pissed off, is because he's saying stuff that, you know what it is? It's like when you have a big zit on your nose, and most of the people in the office pretend not to notice it. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, so, and they try really hard to make eye contact. Or like when you, or how about this? Like you meet a girl that's got club foot. You know, like, so, I'm not noticing your foot. No, let's, is that copier working yet? I have some copies I need to make. And then, of course, you know, you bring in, like, you know, the 10-year-old that hasn't been taught tact yet, who says, what's wrong with your foot? And everybody cringes, because you're like, no, you're not supposed to mention it. We're all kind of made embarrassed by it. Don't talk about it. That's exactly what happened here. Whether it's true or not, he pointed out something that we are all embarrassed of. So, anyway.
It's kind of like the waning days of the Soviet Union.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
End of the empire.
And you know what it is? More specifically, it's like that thing that was on Gorbachev's forehead that we all agreed not to talk about.
Oh, like you remember somebody that dropped an egg on his head?
Yeah, like he had that weird, unnerving, gross birthmark on his forehead. And look at that. Nobody's perfect. I'm just saying. But we all agreed not to talk. But imagine if somebody had said that. Imagine if Hugo Chavez had come to the... And furthermore, Mikhail Gorbachev's forehead is gross and needs to be covered. And we all would have been like, oh, God, you can't, you know? But it would have been so awkward, because that's exactly what we thought every time we saw Mikhail Gorbachev. And you know what?
Well, imagine the type of forceps used in the Soviet Union.
Let me ask you this. If we could have America vote right now on which president to send for, like, some sort of international celebrity political jeopardy, would anybody send George W. Bush? No, because he'd be schooled and we'd look stupid. Nobody likes to admit such things. When it's pointed out by others, it just makes us feel all oogie. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for Democracy on the March.
Here's your Democracy on the March. Right.
America! Yeah! Come in again to save the mother's day, yeah, America! Yeah!
What's up, Brigitte? We want peace. The Pentagon's top brass has moved into second stage contingency planning for a potential military strike in Iran, according to one senior intelligence official familiar with the plan. The official, who is close to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest ranking official in each branch of the U.S. military, said the chiefs have started what is called branches and sequels contingency planning involving the various steps involved after initial military strike. Adding to the concern of both military and intelligence officials alike is the nuclear option, the possibility of preemptive use of nuclear weapons targeting alleged WMD facilities in Iran.
All right. It's so kind of telling when they're
teasing people like this is some kind of Madonna story.
They don't even bother to write new copy anymore. They're sort of crossing out Iran. All right, there you go. So we'll soon be bringing freedom to Iran, just to, for those who are playing the home game. You can get ready to check that one off on your bingo box. There's your democracy. Thank you. All right. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. After this shake break here, we'll come back. We got more on the way. The AM 970 Noon News Hour continues. Later on, we got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop, the new Weird Al single, and, of course, Scott Daly from Film People Radio is going to be here as well. Plus, the Mary Kay guy will be here giving Scotty a good facial scrubbing. It's 503-733-2970. More on the way. Stay right there. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Emerson Radio Program. All right, Tim Riley rejoining us momentarily. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Any second now.
I think he just likes to take as much time as possible to be away from us.
Just as much as he can press. Any moment.
No?
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 And no.
Oh.
Any second now. So.
So your caffeine wearing off a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
You have lunch yet?
I was not getting a visa.
Okay, thank you. Hello. It's 503-733-2970.
That makes it okay, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Anyway, so I was going to read some emails here, but we'll go back to it. Tim Riley at the City Desk. How you doing? What flavor is that? Is that the...
Tim, is this your magazine?
It is.
This man is distractingly hot.
What is that, the New York Times magazine? Who is that guy? Tim and I were talking about this earlier, actually. Who is the guy?
He's a French actor, Romain Duris.
Do you find yourself sometimes, there'll be some celebrity, well, you probably don't have this as much audio, but this is probably some celebrity, and you suddenly feel really dumb because you feel like you're supposed to know who they are, and then you don't. I have this problem with male actors a lot, where it's like they'll be like, blah, 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 you know, male actor, most recently seen it, and it's like some guy and I have no idea who he was.
There's so many of them. I can't keep track of them anymore.
Who's that chick they just cast as Wonder Woman?
Oh, that's Rachel Bilson.
And she's from the OC? I can see my pop culture knowledge is just like getting further and further away. You know what it is? Here's my pop culture knowledge. It's like when you're seeing it, it's like in the movies, when the cruise ship is taking off, and there's somebody on land holding a paper streamer that's connected to the woman on the dock, and then like this, you know, and then it just, and there's a moment where you just lose it.
She's holding a Whitman sampler.
That's with Paul Harvey. Paul, and here's the other thing about Paul Harvey. It's a side note.
Yes.
Not only is Paul Harvey a genius and a giant and a legend and a towering icon of broadcasting, but man, B, that guy makes a ton of money. C, I don't think he's ever been off the air. I think he's been on the air consistently.
Since 1933.
Is that true? Mm-hmm. Did Wikipedia say that?
No, well, when I Googled
Well, or whatever. But I mean,
yeah, his first radio job was in 1933.
Jesus God. I mean, can anybody else in radio say that? No. I would almost guarantee you this. I would guarantee you that Paul Harvey probably has the longest continuous broadcast. Probably the longest continuing broadcaster in American history, certainly. He's got to be right now. And all of the stuff he advertises. See, Paul Harvey is the very definition of... find that one gimmick earlier on in your career that nobody else does. And I think it used to be a lot easier to come up with great gimmicks before they were all taken. And I think it used to be a lot easier to captivate people's attention. I saw this the Behind the Music for AC/DC, and they were talking about Bon Scott and how that guy from Behind the Music was doing... they were talking about how some AC/DC concert in, like, 1972, where, like, Bon Scott went on television in drag, and it scandalized the whole country, and the, you know, Australia was outraged by the singer's antics, and it's like, who would be scandalized by going, it's so easy to shock people in 1970, you know what I mean? It was so easy just to stun people. So it is with Paul Harvey with that, the rest of the story. That was gold. The minute... you've heard that. Have you heard that story about Casey Kasem? Same thing. Casey Kasem was a DJ, just some idiot guy sitting there playing Holly's records or whatever, and he was trying to come up with, you know, whatever he was going to do that day. And it's amazing that nobody had ever thought to do this, but he found in a wastebasket some sort of gossip rag, some sort of music magazine, and he came up with this thing of like. Because Casey Kasem invented the tease. He really did. He refined to an art form the guarantees. And as he tells this story, he's like, so I found a magazine. We are sitting in a wastebasket. And I decided to pick up that magazine and read the first sentence of a paragraph. But then not read the second half of the paragraph until later. And I mean, like, out of that tiny, minuscule piece of crap acorn, the huge oak of Casey Kasem's career, that's his entire career is predicated on the fact that he would read you the first half of a sentence and then not read the second half of the sentence until later. You know? Same thing with Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey is even better. Paul Harvey would read you the entire news story except for the final three words. And then he'd like, you get the final three words after this commercial break. And that's it. I mean, you have to be a lot more creative than that to get attention now. You can't just leave out three words from a story. Jesus. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, back in Arkansas.
I want to have a recurring bit called Meanwhile, Back in Arkansas.
A judge has denied a request to delay a November 8th trial because of Arkansas's highly popular deer season opening. Attorney John Hall said he fears his client will not receive a fair trial because jurors will be daydreaming about being in the woods shooting deer. Another hearing is set for October 23rd, but Hall said his lawyers said they couldn't do it because that's the opening of squirrel season.
Deer season, squirrel season. Right, there you go. Daydream of shooting deer and slapping women who talk back to them. Let's see. Oh, let's real quickly, this is as an end of week. Speaking of a recurring bit, let's real quickly check in with our good friend Tim, our radio prodigy to be, as Scotty J refers to him. Tim, how are you, sir?
Hey, not bad. How you doing, Rick?
What's up, brother? How goes your search for employment in the radio world?
Willie, the guy who called in yesterday, I think it was.
Yes.
He works at OPB.
Okay.
I guess they have a radio station there.
That's what
I
hear.
Is his last name Be Good?
What?
But he wants me to come in today at 3:30 and then watch him do his 6 to 8 show.
On OPB?
Yeah.
He wants you to come at 3:30 and watch him do his 6 o'clock show? That's a long day.
It's very confusing. All right, and so you're gonna sit and observe him do some sort of a radio program.
Yeah, and I guess he's gonna show me how to work soundboards and stuff.
Turn up a pot and take NPR program. Yeah, that'll take at least 4 hours.
Yeah, Rick. I was gonna ask, about 40 seconds of that. Yeah, we'll be turning on the network feed, and then the rest of it will be getting him cigarettes. That'll be the rest of your job there.
Do you know anything about kidney stones? I know, this is
kind of
off subject. But.
Is that tonight's topic on OPB? Oh, it must be pledge night.
Is this a theoretical question, or are you having a burning sensation somewhere?
No, no. My friend.
A friend. Yeah, it's your friend Tom.
No, no.
Uh-huh.
No, his name's Mitch. He works at Thrifty's.
Okay.
And he was working one day, and he had to go pee. Right.
I love this story already. At OPB, they're going to love this kind of story, by the way. Talk a lot about trouble peeing. Yes.
But he was peeing, and he said he was just kind of hanging out, and then all of a sudden, something came out of him.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you. Here's my advice. Doctor. So you know. All right?
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thank you, Timmy. Let us know how things unfold.
Okay.
All right, there you go. All right, there you go. You can probably get a job over... Never mind. I was going to make a kidney stone, old people, KXL. It's beneath me. I'm not going to do it. Remember, was it Gorger that had kidney stones? Todd Gorger? He talked about it on the air.
He had everything.
Seriously. I mean, it was just...
Does he still live here?
I was going to say, does he still live? That's really the question about Todd Gorger.
I would imagine so, yeah.
I'm sure
he's doing fine where he is.
No, Todd Gorger, we've talked about. He's just a guy that he came on our show one time.
Really nice.
We talked about this. A really nice guy, but just really, you kind of wanted to stand next to him because he would pull all the bad luck off of you and onto him. Mm. So anything like if something was going to be falling out of the sky and landing on your foot, you just wanted to stand near him for a minute and the thing would hit him. It's kind of like hanging out with Def Leppard in a way. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
You're not going to talk about something unnatural that came out of your body, are you?
No.
Okay, how can I help you?
You mentioned that Paul Harvey pretty much was continuous for ever and ever.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, he had health problems, I remember, and he was actually off the air for like 6 months.
Really? But I think his 6 whole months, and I think his son took over, though, for that period of time, didn't he?
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because it was like a Jason Jarvis, Judy Jarvis kind of a thing.
The guy's like older than dinosaurs, so that's why,
No, I mean, it's...
expecting to be on the air every day.
It's pretty impressive, actually, that Paul Harvey, I mean, that he would only take 6 months. I mean, he's one of those guys that lives it and breathes it, man, that, I mean, is, that the age of 84 or whatever, he finally had to take 6 months off because his eyeballs fell out or some crap. So I mean, it's that guy is really impressive. As much as we poke fun,
I remember listening to him when I was like 12 years old. So.
You know, and the thing about Paul Harvey is you can only make fun of that guy because he's world famous and everyone knows who he is. So I mean, that's the thing. That's why it doesn't matter that we make fun of it, because to make fun of a guy like Paul Harvey, you can only get away with that, and the only reason the jokes even work is because he is so famous and so good at what he does.
Exactly.
So same thing. All right, there you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did he always have a Monday through Friday? Because I remember listening to him on the weekends.
It's syndicated. I don't think he ever did anything live. It was all short-form stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It was always... And was it just Rest of the Story? Or was Rest of the Story a bit inside of...
Rest of the Story was separate.
It was a bit inside of, his regular newscasts.
No, it was separate.
Okay, it was a separate
program.
Okay. And so...
Because I remember it ran 5:30, so I would have to get a 5:30 cart.
And so was that... Uh-huh. So was that like it was just sort of a separate like update or feature or whatever they would feed in addition to
feed on ABC closed circuit. And sometimes you would hear Paul Harvey testing his level. He'd go, Paul Harvey, 3, 2, 1, woof.
What I would give to have that. Did they ever? There's no Paul Harvey bloopers that I'm aware of.
No, he didn't make mistakes.
There's no. He was a god. He was a flawless machine. There was nothing. There's no equivalent. There's no Paul Harvey equivalent of that Kasem thing. Where I'm trying to do a dedication about a goddamn dog or whatever he did. However he's talking.
That was pretty good.
I know. I can't really do him.
You still have that?
Everybody has that, man. Everybody has that.
It is the best. It has never been outdone.
That Casey Kasem. But that is the definitive radio. So Paul Harvey would feed down his bits live, not pre-recorded?
Well, there would be the live feed from Chicago way back when, and then there would be a taped one.
But I mean,
back in the 70s.
But when you had to be there to get him on tape, was he feeding it down live and you taped it? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I used to do with that the Joy Brown morning thought or whatever that minute was. Like Rush used to do that too. I don't think he does anymore, but there used to be the Rush Limbaugh morning update that it would feed. It was sort of like that.
And then ABC would call out different call letters and give away money. They called out your station on that.
I used to, man, a closed circuit. look at who was I talking about? I was talking to Squid about this. Our friend Squid.
I don't think anybody cares about this but us.
I don't care. The thing about this is in radio, I think they've gotten rid of closed circuit feeds because of stuff like that Casey Kasem thing. I don't think you can get closed circuit feeds anymore because I think they got tired of these sort of internal gaffes and profanities being taped. Like there used to be the show. Remember that, you know, the KGON is that rock line, which is where, like, you can call up and talk to
that's been on forever.
Bad Company or something. There used to be a Top 40 version of that called Hitline USA. And Hitline USA, but it would be like MC Hammer or, Brian Adams or something instead of a rock guy. And it was hosted by Lisa, what's her name, in fact, I think maybe she was just Lisa from Kiss FM in Los Angeles, and Elvis Duran from whatever it is, it's the station, WPLJ, I think, in New York, which is that Mojo Radio now that Scott Shannon does. This really is the most shop talk inside radio conversation. But anyway, so when I was a kid, I would run that show. One of my first jobs was to sit there and run the board for Hitline USA and make sure that the local commercials play correctly. And the show would come down, like most radio shows do, like Lycus and John, when it comes down at 6 minutes after the hour, for whatever insane reason. And so I had to play local, but I would have it in queue, meaning it wasn't going over the air, but I could hear what they were doing in the studio. And they were just, man, it was just the vilest. They were working blue off the air, just the vilest, raunchiest, most profane. And I look back now, boy, I wish I'd taped all of that. In the age of the internet, it would be fantastic just to upload all of that stuff from, like, these radio people. Just the vilest, most hideous conversations they would have over that at any moment. If I had inadvertently hit the program button on the pod, it all would have gone over the air. All right, here's Tim Riley.
What are we doing?
The news hour, Tim.
Oh. Well, let's do the Hick Watch, shall we?
Here's your Hick Watch.
Copenhagen makes me feel good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should.
Who remembers wax cylinders?
I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house.
Yeah.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Oh, yeah. This comes to us from Greenleaf, Idaho. All Americans have the right to bear arms. Some towns have even gone as far as to require each household to have a gun. Now, a small Idaho town is contemplating a similar idea. It's called the Civil Emergencies Ordinance. And although gun ownership is just one piece of this ordinance, it's the part that's getting the most attention. We're blessed to have a fairly rural area in the state. That's a blessing.
You're really blessed. That's a blessing the way that, like, a tumor is a blessing.
So we don't have a lot of crime, and we think we'd like to keep it that way, says Lee Belt, Greenleaf's city clerk. Drive about 10 minutes west of Caldwell, and you'll run into Greenleaf, Idaho, population 860. If city council member Steve Jett has his way, each head of household can legally own a gun, and they will. Along with that, they're encouraged to have ammunition and appropriate training. I think the city council is hoping it'll happen, and this will be a deterrent to crime as the city and region increases in population.
Because I'm sure that, what is it, Green Belt?
Green Belt.
I'm sure Greenleaf, Idaho is a hotbed of gang activity right now. Have you ever noticed this? That the towns that are most concerned about the drugs and the gangs are towns that don't have any chance of either really happening or existing there.
We don't want the UN coming in here taking this over.
Every time. I mean, we've joked about this before, that there's this radio station in Spokane where Mark Furman does a daily talk show, which is great. But you know where that show can be heard? Greenleaf, Idaho. Pounds right into that city. And you hear this every now and again, once every 18 months, there'll be a news story like this, where there's some idiot hick town somewhere where they require everyone to own a handgun for reasons that no one can ever really explain. And then the amazing thing is, I mean, really, you know, in a way, we almost should require everybody in America everywhere to own a gun. Because the thing is, here's the thing, how do I put it, how shall I explain this? If you have a room full of 10 people, and you put a gun in there somewhere, like you just lock 10 random people in a room with a gun, and you come back in like a month, the dumbest of those people are going to be dead. That's the thing. The really dumb and the really violent are going to be gone. So it is sort of a nice self-cleaning oven if you just arm an entire town. All right, there you go. There's your Hick Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Bum, 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 bum,
Hey, we got an email here from our good friend Susan Reynolds, marketing director for CBS Radio Portland. Rick, when I worked at WLS in Chicago, which is impressive, our studios were on the fifth floor, and ABC Radio Network offices were on the fourth floor. I was producing a morning show. You know, she worked with Steve Dahl, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Paul Harvey and I often arrived at the same time, 4:30 a.m., and rode up in the elevator together. I always said, "Good morning, Mr. Harvey," because he was such a legend that he had to be called Mr. He also rolled up in a pink Cadillac every morning. That's fantastic.
He must have sold Mary Kay on the side.
That is so great. That's one of those things that is so absurd and dissonant that it just becomes genius. That's like Paul Harvey wearing a pimp suit or something. It just doesn't make any sense at all. Like
he may have.
Or having a grill. I was just a kid, and I was nervous about being such around such a legend. He was old then, by the way, but always impeccably dressed. You do get the feeling that he's always impeccable, and that his hair is full of Brill cream. Exactly. All right, it's fantastic. It's 503-733-2970. Oh, is this about Paul Harvey? All right, hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, please, with the...
KLTK!
Now, welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, former godlike program director, Bruce Agler. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon. More Paul Harvey info. You seem to be a little bit confused about the rest of the story. That is the relatively recent spinoff program.
When you say relative, that means...
1976. the phenomenal success of Paul Harvey News and Comment, which is what the morning and noontime shows are called... caused them to talk him into doing a spinoff, and I don't know, they like doubled his salary in 1976 to get him to do that.
Jesus.
He's been doing the morning and the noontime show since 1951.
Was he just around before anybody else figured out how to turn the radio on?
Well, it's only 1951. The longest, you know, you said that must be the longest running broadcast, not even close. The longest running broadcast, continuous operating broadcast in radio or television is the Metropolitan Opera Saturday broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's been going for 70. They're celebrating their 75th anniversary.
It wouldn't be like that. What is it? It's not WL. What is that station? The WNS, the Opry station?
No, the Grand Old Opry came a little later.
Okay.
Yeah, the Metropolitan Opera started in 31. So Paul Harvey was only 13 when the Met started. Although I don't know if this is true, but Paul Harvey is probably the longest continuing person to run a show because the Met has had several hosts. The same guy hosted it forever. His name was Milton Cross, but he had died in like 76 or 77.
And so that would make sense if Paul Harvey's around 88. That would actually work out.
Yeah, so he was 13 when the Metropolitan Opera started.
He probably still looked old, though.
But he does do the show live every day, I believe, still does it live. The morning was. Now, the rest of the story are taped. They don't make him stay there for 14 hours a day. So he tapes the rest of the story, and I think he tapes those all at once, you know, once a month or something.
Well, you know, the great thing about Paul Harvey is that, like, he's one of those guys that you know that the minute he stopped working, he would die. He's like a shark, you know, if he ever quits moving.
Yeah, obviously, this is just the only thing in his life. And interesting, you mentioned listening to him on a station that you used to call Coma.
Yeah.
He actually worked on a station that was called Coma, KOMA in Oklahoma City, was one of his first jobs.
How appropriate is that? All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
That's where KOTK ended up.
Bruce Agler. That is true. KOTK is now, those call letters are now...
KOTK!
Is now in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yes, along with the KOMA.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. There you go. Bruce Agler, ladies and gentlemen, former godlike program director. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, a clothless man was arrested on a cool Monday morning in connection with a bizarre act of burglary and vandalism. This happened in some small town in California. A fellow comes home and encounters a man wrapped only in a sheet coming out his back door. The sheet-wrapped mail, later identified
as sheet-wrapped mail, is somewhere
37-year-old Terrence Michael Dean of Clements, asked the homeowner what he was doing home. Well, the homeowner replied it was his home. Once inside, the homeowner discovered all the home's water faucets were missing, some of which had overflowed, causing water damage.
This story's very confusing.
While he turned off the faucets in one of the bathrooms, he observed numerous packages of meat lying mysteriously in the sink and bathtub.
I don't understand anything that's going on here. Is this small pieces of many stories that you stitched together?
No, this is one entire
There's
story.
There's a man who was wrapped, not a sheep, but wrapped in a sheet.
Wrapped in a sheep.
Police found the man wrapped in a sheep. That's like that guy in Seattle. They found a man wrapped in a sheet.
He turned on all the faucets in this house that he burglarized.
And then left many packages of meat laying around.
That's correct. And it was noted that the bathroom meat, in addition to several lit candles.
Bathroom meat. There's at least three different jokes.
In the kitchen,
I can make.
They found a bowl of unpopped corn kernels, two burned matches, and a cup of water soaked with a paper note that read, "I love cherry."
Am I having an acid trip or something? This story doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't really.
This is the best story I've ever heard. This story is like some Lewis Carroll poem. I could just make anything out of this because there's all of. Okay. Well, hey, let that be a lesson to whoever about something.
Well, when deputies arrived, they found the sheep-wrapped man perched on the
sheep again,
perched on the step of his neighbor's garage. This time, wrapped only in a towel and smoking a cigarette. He refused orders at gunpoint to stand, but was taken down by one of the deputies using a control hold, whatever that might be. Well, the medical staff documented some 50 cuts and scratches to the man's entire body. He also had large stickers and star thistle embedded in his feet and legs, and a large bloody scrape on his right buttock. Authorities told deputies that the man had fractured his left ankle, too. There's nothing more to report until a drug screening is conducted.
At which I will be fascinated. I think we should screen the writer of that for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I just want to tell you, this is an actual headline. Thank you. People have already started to follow my suggestion on this. They've responded.
Yes.
This is the feature commentary in this morning's Wall Street Journal by Howard Dean, who we love. The feature commentary. Anybody know what the headline is?
No.
Thank you. Democrats must have a new direction.
No.
There you go. Thank you. There you go, kids. If anybody can get me audio of that, him saying that, I appreciate that. There you go. Democrats must have a new direction. That's good.
It only took three tries.
Oh, thank you. These staples are really hard.
Yeah.
I like math. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let me tell you that the first toxicology test performed under Nicole Smith's dead son revealed no traces of illegal substances. This story is weird.
This story is so.
Why can't we get the facts on this?
I don't understand. It makes
What's
me
want. Taking so long? What's missing in this picture? What don't they want us to know? Do they think we're stupid?
Wait, so they said no illegal substances?
The first toxicology report performed on Anna Nicole Smith's dead son revealed no traces of illegal substances in his bloodstream.
It makes me want to go steal the body myself and just take it somewhere. Just figure out what the hell happened to it. Has anybody seen the body? Did they cremate him? Well, they must not have because they're doing...
No, they're still, they're
still cutting on him. Okay. His story is so bizarre. There's just... And the fact that it's in the Bahamas for some reason makes it even more bizarre to me, because then it's like...
They shrink people's heads there for voodoo.
I'm pretty sure that they're wrong. You're wrong about that.
Dance around flaming rocks.
Oh, Tim.
Perhaps I have another country in mind. Maybe that's not them. But to my knowledge, that was true at one time.
Go ahead. I can't talk.
They didn't say no drugs. They just said illegal drugs.
They said no traces of illegal substances.
Of illegal substances.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I don't think they shrink people's heads in the Bahamas. They just serve drinks with little paper things in them there.
That's at the Chinese restaurant at Panda's Board. That's those little paper umbrellas.
Okay.
So that's all we know about that, and nobody will tell us anything more. So they're just wasting our time. <They're> like, so they come up with some facts. I think they ought to let this young fellow be dead.
Goddamn nonsense. Okay.
Smallest story.
I'm putting it up because I can't read this.
What?
That's
impossible. That print is ridiculous. That's like 2-point type.
Let's ask Scotty J to come in here and read
this. Let's read this. Scotty, wait, hold on. Let me. Summon him now.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say.
Jesus.
You're not going to America.
And if not, we'll call that young fellow Tim in here.
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
This is the smallest print I've ever
seen. To read that.
I can't get this.
Why didn't you make it bigger?
All right, I Scotty, would you like to read the story, please?
Oh, geez. About Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What does the title say?
Schwarzenegger gives up Hummers.
Fantastic.
Oh, I see.
It's all basically for that.
I see.
All right. Please to read the rest of the story now.
Arnold Schwarzenegger has ditched his beloved $950,000 fleet of Hummer cars in a bid to save the environment. The Terminator movie star turned California governor is devoted to the
sport. That's some pretty
utility.
Impressive reading. That's very small typing.
Yeah, I can't.
Have you?
Yeah, I know. Because I'm working on reading and delivery and
that can be hard. It's the reading and the speaking together that are difficult.
Right.
This, Tim, this was the kind of gold that in your stead, when you were waiting for the dishwasher that day. Have you had
dishwasher? That's pretty much the
have you
gist
had LASIK done or something?
Yes, I have. About 6 years ago.
Really? And so I was going to ask, because you don't appear to age in any real way except for your huge crow's feet.
And my left eye squints.
Don't do that,
this
please.
Radio, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, quit winking at me. So you got perfect hair. You have perfect eyes. What have you... I mean... Are you sure you don't own any chaps?
I'm the perfect guy.
Don't say that anymore. Go away now.
I'm sure Mrs. Right. J thought that after you came stumbling in at 2 o'clock the other day.
Waitress at Dante's thought. All right, thank you.
Waitress?
No, I didn't say anything.
Waitress?
I didn't say anything. No, there was no. There was no untoward activity. No. I just wanted. I'm just saying that there was this moment actually when Scotty and I were sitting next to each other at the table, and Dante's, and I mean this, and you know me, you know that I mean this as a compliment. There is a disproportionately large number of trashy women at Dante's.
Oh, yeah, and the more Rockstar, we're not talking about that, the more that the show that we'd not talk about anymore progressed, the more sluts were showing up.
Totally.
It was crazy.
I mean, Dante's was packed. It was like 70%.
Sluts?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, packed with sluts. It was like 70% sluts in there.
Yeah, with just like little camera whores.
Maybe,
like
it's, only, heard that there maybe it's only there. Certain nights.
It was just when we were watching Storm.
Yeah, no, that's because the news was there and they all, you know, had everything hanging out.
Totally. It's a whole lot of like, look at me, I'm an attention whore. Which is fine. And so, but Dante's was packed with like what Mickey Spillane would call
dames.
Yeah, that's exactly it too. But just a lot of large-breasted gum snappers. You know what I mean? Just like, where are the cameras? You know those girls. But the waitresses there are really hot too. Or not the waitresses, the servers. But Scott and I were at the table, and there's this one waitress who, like the really like low cut, really tight shirt. And I swear to God, this sounds like a bad joke, but she literally like dropped a pencil right in front of us, and she did the, pardon me, I have to bend over and get this pencil. Like, wow. And then and of course we're idiots. And Scotty, I'm sure, had the look on her face exactly like in that photo that's on Sarah's blog, where we're just a bunch of dumb, idiot, horny, married guys going,
that's just creepy.
And then later, Scotty made some company defective, like, I really can't keep my eyes off that waitress. So, I'm just saying. All right. Maybe that's why he was drinking alone at the table later. 503-733-2970. Take a break here. We'll come back with CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. The other stories all have relatively large print. They should start offering a large print version of this program because none of us could read that. Okay. Good God. Shrink heads. What is that? Is that tofu? Oh, it's cheese. Okay. Oh, you bought a whole wheel of cheese.
It's the Laughing Cow cheese.
I love Laughing Cow cheese.
You want some?
Yes, I do.
Have a wedge of cheese.
Thank you. Here's Veruca Salt. Back after this with Jim Roop. Don't go anywhere.